It is your Wednesday daily delivery. I am Michael Rand. Happy to be back for another day, and I hope you guys are having a great day out there as well. What a week. What a week it is. Timberwolves in the playoffs against the Suns. We'll talk about their dominant, once again, Game 2 victory here in just a minute, winning 105-93 on Tuesday night to take a 2-0 lead in that series. Again, we'll get to that in a minute. Andrew Kramer will join me here in just a little while to talk NFL draft, talking through those scenarios one more time. First round of the draft tomorrow night. It's almost here. The speculation will be over in a little more than a day. We will know what the Vikings are doing. At least we hope we will. Please don't push this into the second round or third round. Please don't make us figure this out at some point. I have to think this is going to be actionable items on Thursday night as the Vikings finally decide what they're doing, finally figure out the path forward at quarterback in the draft. So Andrew and I will talk about that here in just a little bit. Oh, by the way, the Twins walked off the White Sox, had a comeback win in that game. Some good transfer portal news for the Gophers football team. Lots to talk about, obviously, on today's show. First, though, what I miss, I kind of gave it away in the intro already, but we're going to talk Wolves at the jump. How could we not? Up 2-0 in this series. What a turnaround from the narrative going into this series, right? Like, think about 5 days ago. We're all talking about, wow, what a bad matchup this is against the Suns. 0-3 against Phoenix in the regular season, including that bad, you know, disappointing blowout loss at Target Center 2 Sundays ago to end the regular season. You're thinking, man, how are they ever going to compete with Phoenix in a 7-game series? Then they come out in game one on Saturday and run the Suns out of the gym, 120-95. Then the question becomes, okay, was that a fluke? Can they do that again? Is that kind of play sustainable? Turns out, yes, it is, in a different way. Wasn't the offense that was dominant in this game. It was balance. It was defense, once again. It was taking care of the ball. And it was Jaden McDaniels, the Jaden McDaniels show in this game that got it done. Let's talk about all of those things right now. First off, all 5 scorers in double figures. And I thought that was key, especially in the first half. Anthony Edwards wasn't really going. Karl-Anthony Towns got 3 fouls in the first quarter, had to sit, I think, all of the second quarter. I don't think I saw him out there at all in the second quarter. So you kind of like, okay, where's the offense going to come from? Those are their 2 primary offensive players. Well, Mike Conley Jr. steps up with a huge first half, has a bunch of points, keeps them in the game. Rudy Gobert has most of his offense at that time, too. They managed to be down just 1 at halftime, despite not getting much from Ant or Cat in the first half. It's 51-50 Phoenix, and you're thinking, okay, Wolves didn't play terribly, but just not getting enough from their big players. You're thinking, that's going to change in the second half, and it did. The defense was great. The offense got more, and that was the difference, part of the difference in the game. The other differences in the game, like I said, turnovers. Timberwolves got 31 points off of Phoenix's turnovers. I believe 20 Phoenix turnovers. Phoenix got just 2 points off of the Timberwolves' 14 turnovers. 14 is a livable number, especially since that was the narrative coming into this series, right? The narrative coming into the season series was, if the Wolves can take care of the ball. Chris Hine talked about that in both the appearances, I think, both before the series and before game 2. Can they take care of the ball? Sloppy play gets Phoenix out in transition, gets them those easy looks. In the half-court defense, the Wolves are so locked down right now, so stifling. Phoenix found a little bit in the second quarter there. They were starting to kind of get Kevin Durant going a little bit, but a lot of those shots didn't feel like they were terribly sustainable. So keeping them in the half-court, keeping them from running out, getting those easy looks was going to be huge. The Wolves did that and got themselves their own easier baskets off of those Phoenix turnovers. Winning that battle is, of course, massive. And like I said, it was another game for the Wolves' depth. Not just scoring, but just being able to keep running fresh bodies out there. They just looked like the more energized team late third quarter, fourth quarter, as they're kind of taking over that game, stretching that lead to 17 in the fourth quarter when it was almost essentially over at that point. Jaden McDaniels getting a couple easy buckets in there, just going to the rim. No, there just didn't seem to be much resistance from Phoenix at that point. They lost Grayson Allen again. He looked like he re-injured that right ankle that he had hurt in game 1. So that piece of it, you know, Phoenix is down a guy. They're already not the deepest team in the world. The Wolves keep running waves out there, even without Kyle Anderson. You got Nikhil Alexander-Walker playing big minutes again, playing key minutes for them again. Naz Reid can come in for Karl-Anthony Towns and be that scorer, be that player instead of Towns. You got decent minutes from Monty Morris. You can just keep running out there in waves, and that really felt like it was evident in the second half. But, like I said, the Jaden McDaniels story was the biggest piece of this game. He looked like the best player on the court for a lot of this game. I don't remember ever thinking that about Jaden McDaniels. As good as he is on defense, as much potential as he still has, I don't remember ever thinking Jaden McDaniels looks like the best player on the court. Anthony Edwards was setting him up in good positions because he was getting constantly double teamed. Jaden McDaniels taking advantage. 25 points, 8 rebounds. That is a lot of rebounds for Jaden McDaniels, who does not do that all that well. Here is head coach Chris Finch after the game talking about Jaden McDaniels' impact, particularly with rebounding.
I mean, his activity has been another level so far in these two games. And I think a lot of it just starts from being a big presence on the glass and just, you know, getting there, playing with a lot of force. Finishing strong around the basket and being confident in his shot, and you know, and the job he's doing on the other end of the floor is, you know, fighting through every single screen, getting hit a bunch. I just thought he had a special performance tonight, really special.
Now, even given all that, even when we know how the game turned out, it was very much in the balance in the third quarter. And I'm taking notes on the game. I can't just watch the game like a normal person because, of course, I know I'm doing a show. I'm just, you know, I'm writing down show prep even as the game's going on. Wolves went on a nice little run. Karl-Anthony Towns, I think, had 8 straight points. They had been down 55-52. Then Cat made a couple free throws, made an and one, and then made a three. Got them to a 60-57 lead. Then Cat took like a heat check three after a Durant miss. It looked like he was like, okay, I'm on fire. Can I get another one? It's a long three. The box score has it down as a 27-footer. Missed it. Suns come down, get a quick three from Bradley Beal, tie the game. Then Anthony Edwards takes a pretty quick three. It looked like to me, maybe not the greatest look. You know, he's like, I'm not shooting well. I'm not getting a lot of opportunities. I'm going to take one. He misses. Booker makes a three. Wolves call timeout. And I'm thinking, okay, is that little stretch going to be the difference in the game? That little maybe lost your focus just a little bit. Like, hey, started taking some shots that weren't necessarily in the flow of the game, trying to get, you know, trying to keep that momentum going, and then all of a sudden it's gone. So I'm thinking, is that going to be the point that they're going to look back on and regret? No. Next thing you know, they rattle off a 12-0 run right after that Phoenix run to go up 72-63. Good balance during that run, getting all sorts of stuff in there. Jaden McDaniels made a dunk off an offensive rebound. Anthony Edwards made a couple free throws. Naz Reid made a two. Edwards with a couple more free throws. Edwards with another jumper. Jaden McDaniels with a two. Like, they just had it going. They got the momentum back so quickly, and that felt like the turning point in the game. What could have been a turning point for Phoenix instead became another turning point for the Wolves in this game. That was impressive to me. That's not something I don't think I've seen from them all that much this year, the ability to kind of quickly reverse those momentum switches. And so instead of that being the pivot point in the game for Phoenix, Minnesota turns it around right away, and it becomes the pivot point for them. They go up 2-0. Now, series switches to Phoenix. The crowd, everybody's been talking about the crowd. The crowd has been unbelievable at Target Center. Now they will go into a much more hostile environment for two games in Phoenix. Can they win at least one of these games in Phoenix? The way they're playing right now, it sure looks like they can. It sure looks like they have been the better team. But you got to remember, Phoenix was 3-0 against them during the regular season. Nothing is guaranteed right now. Nothing has been settled in this series. Like they say, a series doesn't really start until the road team wins a game. No, the road team has not won a game yet. Phoenix looked good in stretches, so I'm still waiting to see, can the Wolves win a game in Phoenix? Right now, though, they look great. They look like a team that is serious about making a playoff run right now. They look like the better team for sure during most of the stretches of this game, and that is not the narrative I or anybody else really had carried into this series.
Open a 5.15% annual percentage yield 9-month certificate from Royal Credit Union. Open now at rcu.org/certificate515. Early withdrawal penalties could reduce earnings and principal. APY accurate as of 4/26/24. Insured by NCUA.
One more time, Andrew Kramer. We're going to talk about the draft and the lead up to it one more time. The draft is Thursday night, first round of it at least. Really the only round that matters to the Vikings right now. They're going to Unless they make a trade, they're going to be sitting out Friday, right?
Yeah, correct. They have 9 picks, 2 of them in the first round and 7 of them on the last day of the draft. So I imagine it won't end that way. There'll be trades left and right and moving up and down boards. But the one that everybody cares about is obviously that first pick.
Who's running this board? Rick Spielman? Sounds like a Spielman board, doesn't it? A couple of firsts and then a bunch of 4 through 7s. It's his dream board.
I actually did see some stat that was like the Vikings have made the most draft picks since 2014. And I was like, let's think of why that is.
But there have been years where they've had multiple firsts, though. There was the one year they had 3 firsts, right, back in 2012 or 2013? I can't remember.
Correct, 2013. Then the following year they had 2 of them because in 2014 they traded back up for Teddy Bridgewater.
That's right.
The last quarterback they took in the first round.
Good segue, because they almost certainly will be taking a quarterback in the first round this year. The question is who, the question is where, and the question is how much will it cost them? What's your sense right now? What do you think is the most likely way that Thursday night plays out?
Everybody's waiting on the New England Patriots. I think that's it. And now, if you trust the reporting coming out of ESPN, Adam Schefter's connecting Jaden Daniels, the LSU Heisman winner, and Washington, the Commanders, who have the number 2 overall pick. So presumably these first 2 picks are set between Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels. So the draft starts at number 3 with New England, and whether or not they want to take Drake May, JJ McCarthy, or trade down with a team like the Minnesota Vikings. You hear teams like the Giants, the Broncos, who just traded for Zach Wilson, being very quarterback needy. I don't imagine the Zach Wilson trade is going to change much for the Denver Broncos. I would imagine they still want to trade up and be aggressive on draft night as well. So the Vikings are going to have competition, and it all starts and really depends on whether or not the Patriots want to actually take a quarterback or whether they want to move that pick and if the Vikings have the best offer to give.
Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, Vikings general manager, at his availability, the pre-draft lead up, talked about the walk-away price. That became a good term to think about. What do you think is or should be their walk-away price with New England at number 3?
I would be surprised if the Minnesota Vikings give up 3 years of first-round picks, which to them currently means 4 first-round picks. It means the 11 and 23 this year. It means the following year, 2025, and as well as 2026. My understanding is that they have been okay with packaging multiple years of first round picks together, potentially this year and next. Well, currently that's 3 first round picks, and to go up from 11 to number 3 overall, if you look at the precedent and you look at what the Niners gave up to move up from 12 to number 3 in 2021 for Trey Lance, I believe, there was another team that made a similar move. Oh, the Texans just made a similar move for CJ Stroud, to move back up to number 3. 3 first round picks is generally commensurate with about an 8 to 9 spot jump in that top 10 range. So the Patriots, and you've seen the reporting, you've talked to Tom Curran, the Patriots might want to say, well, you know, this is a special year and this is a quarterback premium, and a year like this only comes around once, and you better strike while the iron's hot. Well, if that's the case, and the Patriots really believed that, they would just take the quarterback, would they not? If they really believe that this was just a great, and you and I have talked about this before, Mike, if you're the Patriots and you think Drake May is worth 4 first round picks to move out of, and you're asking that of the Vikings, wouldn't you just take Drake May?
Good point.
So at this point, I think that the Kwesi's got to talk about the walkaway price, because he's got to draw a line. And he said, yeah, your only leverage in a negotiation is your willingness to do something else. And I think that's a smart way to go about it, because otherwise you're negotiating against yourself. And the sense that I get is that 4 first round picks would be too rich. And I would be surprised, based on what I've heard, if the Vikings were to unload that much to move up from 11 to number 3.
I think that's fair. I think you have to walk away if it starts to be a conversation about 4 first round picks. Even if you love Drake May, like you've got a lot of other needs on this roster, and you're going to have a hard time addressing them, building around your quarterback of the future, if you are suddenly not going to have another first round pick until 2027. Is 2026 as far out as you can trade a future first in the NFL? I can't remember what the rules are, but I know that it's different than like the NBA, where you can go out like 7 years with these future picks. Do you know what the limit is on how far out you can go with your future draft pick trading?
Oh, I can't remember now. You're testing my knowledge offhand. I'd have to double check that and look it up. I'm not entirely sure if you can trade 4 years out, but I mean, you can trade 3 years out. We've seen that done before. I think the Rams recently did that with one of the veterans they acquired in their suit before their Super Bowl run. So I'm not sure about four. Yeah, that might I'd have to double check it. But yeah.
So let's game this out a little bit. Let's say New England really is, you know, only going to accept this kind of bonkers offer, and the Vikings just say, you know what, we've got our walkaway price. You go ahead and trade with somebody else, or you go ahead and just take Drake May. What should be the price to move up to four or five if you're the Vikings? Should it be the same as the three firsts that you were going to send to potentially to New England, or should it be a little bit less than that? What do you think about that? If you're talking about probably the fourth quarterback in the class now, probably J.J. McCarthy, and a little bit not quite as far up as you would be going to get Drake May at three.
Yeah, and the tough part about judging these things is there's so many different trade charts now. There's no longer just the Jimmy Johnson old point for point, round for round kind of. This is the math easily lines up. If you look at a place like Pro Football Focus, they will bring in five different types of trade charts and just kind of show them all to you at once and break it all down. And they've got their own formula they came up with whatever methodology they've got. So there's not a clear answer on these things. And teams like Kwesi talks about having his own proprietary valuation on these things. So now all of a sudden the Vikings have their own method of valuing what a draft pick is worth. If you look at the standard charts and you look at kind of how things are typically done, or just the you know, the vanilla chart, 11 and 23 should be enough to get number four. Maybe some sweetener in there a little bit, but definitely not three first round picks. Now, if you've got other charts that weigh things, such as this is a special quarterback draft, or this is a special wide receiver draft, or the, you know, the positions of value are such where you are going to want to trade up in this draft, there might be charts that weigh that more heavily, and the Vikings might have to give up more than just 11 and 23. But historically, too, when you look at precedent, which matters a lot in these cases, generally that is enough to make that jump. So when Kwesi talks about, we gave ourselves flexibility in acquiring this other first round pick, it's not just about, you know, hey, if we have to stay at these spots, we've now got multiple bites at the apple here. It's also about a trade package for number four, a trade package for number three. And it obviously becomes so much more appealing to have two first round picks right here, right now. If you're the Cardinals and you're trading back from four, it's so much more appealing to have those two picks this year than to bank on next year. And we'll see how the Vikings are going to be, or we'll see how the Giants are, whoever you're trading back with.
Yeah, it's a known commodity.
Exactly. It's a known commodity. So the Vikings position themselves to have quite the appealing trade package for them if it does come down to number four. And they've been trading with Arizona recently. We just saw them do it with Josh Dobbs, and they've done it before with Monty Austinfort in the offseason. So they've got a good relationship. I think the Vikings have got to feel pretty good about that spot, given what they have, given the relationships with the front office. And given the fact that there's not so much smoke coming out of Arizona saying you better give up a king's ransom like there is out of Boston.
Josh Dobbs, who in retrospect sabotaged their draft position by playing so well in those two games, went back when we had Dobbs mania. Just kidding about that. You always want to try to win, and they, you know, they had a legitimate chance at the playoffs at that point. So, okay, so let's go further. Like, the Chargers at five have been talked about. Is there any, you know, is there any world in which they try to make a trade for Justin Herbert, that the Chargers like J.J. McCarthy so much, that new coach Jim Harbaugh likes his Michigan quarterback so much, that becomes the quarterback solution here?
That'd be great, wouldn't it? There's one person who could answer that question. That's the owner of the Los Angeles Chargers. Is it Spanos? Spanos still the owner? That's the guy, right? That's the guy who could tell you whether or not he wants to move on from his multi-million dollar quarterback, and whether or not he trusts a guy, Harbaugh, who's walking in as the head coach to just totally flip the franchise's future on its head and make that kind of move. I would be shocked. I have heard nothing of the ilk that Herbert's available. On top of that, we haven't seen anything reported that would mean that he's available. So I would be surprised if that is the move. What I wouldn't be surprised, though, to see is if somehow the Chargers at five come into play, or even the Giants at six come into play, if you see these quarterbacks slip beyond what we think. I think everybody's talking themselves into it's going to be quarterbacks picks number 1, 2, 3, and possibly 4 right away. Things happen in the draft. Do you remember Will Levis was like a top 5 NBA or NFL pick in the sports books like a couple weeks before the draft last year? And then he's sitting there on the waiting room, the green room, getting shown over and over, still yes. waiting. Like, these things happen. There's a reason why only 13 prospects are going to opening night of the draft. People don't want to be seen on TV probably looking like that.
Right.
So I think things happen we don't expect. The media always overhypes prospects sometimes. So yeah, the Vikings could be looking at a spot where, what if somehow May and McCarthy are available at number 4? Like, what happens then?
Yeah.
Like, what happens if the Patriots
say, we want Marvin Harrison Jr.? What if they decide they want something else? Yeah.
Yeah, so that could just throw all of this in whack. And then all of a sudden the Chargers can trade because they've got their quarterback and they'll get Malik Neighbors, you know, a little later or whatever. Like, sure. If, you know, so this could all change so quickly. And I guess the only way it's boring is if it just all goes chalk, you know, the way we expect.
Can you imagine a scenario where the Vikings get shut out of the trade market, where Patriots stay at 3 and then somebody makes Arizona a better offer at 4? Say the Giants move up from 6 to 4 and offer, you know, two more future picks and things like that. I don't know. Can you imagine a world where they get shut out, and what would they do at that point?
Yes, because anything can happen. You know what I mean? Yeah. So when I say yes, I say you have to, I think Kwesi said this in his press conference at one point, of like, you have to kind of bake in an irrationality price into this when we're discussing trading up for quarterbacks, meaning that you have to kind of anticipate that there's going to be a crazy suitor, you know, wanting to move up for this quarterback premium position and draft that they find themselves in. And I could see the Vikings getting outbid by a crazier or more desperate team for a Drake May or a JJ McCarthy. That doesn't mean that they wouldn't. That doesn't mean that they wouldn't be willing to take Michael Penix Jr. at number 11 or trade up to number 9 or whatever and get him. I don't see them getting shut out at quarterback. I could see them getting shut out of the top 10 at quarterback. Okay. If you get enough teams that are really desperate and needy, then we're talking about these guys in the later rounds, the Penix, the Bo Nix. You know, how high was their evaluation of them? How high do they want to go up and get them? And that's part of the flexibility of having the 23rd pick as well. You can trade up from there if you're willing to give up even more assets, or you can trade back from 11 and still have multiple bites at it. I think they've truly tried to build in all these contingency plans in case they do get shut out, because they have to prepare for all these possibilities, because it can absolutely happen.
Do we have a sense at all? I mean, I think we've obviously, the reporting from you guys seems like Drake May is someone that they're zeroing in on, and I think they like McCarthy too. Do we have a sense at all for how they feel about Penix and Nix, or is that just a mystery at this point?
Yeah, Penix is one I do not know much about what their evaluations have been between his pro day visit with their quarterbacks coach McCown and Grant Udinski, their assistant coach. And then from what we know, they've gone and had O'Connell and Kwesi at these private workouts with all of these guys. And so we do not know at this point what they've walked away saying about each of these individual guys. But we do know that Drake May is somebody they know very well, somebody that we know Josh McCown loves. So that's why we feel comfortable talking about that connection. And then you can hear things behind the scenes about McCarthy and how things have gone so far at the combine. But the later you get into the process, generally, and not to speak for all reporters, but generally the less you hear.
Yeah.
Right up until you get up to draft night. And with Penix, he's not somebody that you've, at least I have heard a ton about in this process. So he's fascinating, because the major concern with him is medical, right? It's the two ACL tears. It's the shoulder problems. He's a little bit older. Him and Nix are 24 years old, transfers. They've been in college for 6 years. Teams usually like to spend these high resource and high value draft picks on younger guys they can grow and develop and have for 15 plus years. Right. So that sends them down a little bit. Penix, though, has the physical tool that Nix does not. He's got one of the most talented arms in this draft class. He also, apparently, according to scouts and evaluators who get paid to evaluate these things, has an incredible mind for the position and vision for what he ran at Washington. And then he used to be more mobile before the ACL injuries. Right. So what does he have to offer you now? That way is a mystery, kind of a black box. What is his medicals? That's also a mystery to us on the outside. And then how do the Vikings view those tools fitting Kevin O'Connell's system? Kevin O'Connell recently gave a speech that went viral at a local church here in the Twin Cities. And he talked about how I have a reputation for being a quarterback killer and how I can be really hard on these prospects and just say, look, we're not drafting this guy, and talking about past years, like we're not drafting this guy because he can't do X, Y, or Z, and how other people have been, you know, trying to open my eyes to like be a little softer on some of these guys and come around to them. We have no idea if O'Connell's looked at Penix and said, I can't work with this, I can't work with that, whatever. We have no idea. The little bit I've heard on Bo Nix is that they don't view him as a first round prospect. That could be the case for Penix. So we don't know at this point, or they could view Penix as worthy of a mid to late first round pick. And maybe he is their contingency option if they miss on these top four, how we view these top four guys. So it's what makes all of this so incredibly fascinating, because they put, as they talk about, they put years of work into this. They have zeroed in on this quarterback class for multiple years, knowing how good this crop is supposed to be. And from what we have heard, the closer the looks they've gotten, the more they've fallen in love with these prospects.
Royal Credit Union smart checking accounts offer no monthly fees and no minimum balance. Enjoy financial freedom when you open your Royal Credit Union smart checking account online at rcu.org/gochecking. Insured by NCUA.
Should be fascinating. Andrew, they've got a lot of other holes on the roster. How, even if it's rounds 4 through 7, how do they go about addressing that in this draft? Oh, by the way, there's not just quarterbacks that they're going to take.
Yeah, I would be surprised that, let's say the Vikings trade up in the first round and it is chalk. They get the fourth pick, they get McCarthy, whatever, and they still don't have a second or third round pick.
Yeah.
I would be surprised if they don't trade back into the second or third round. They have 2 fourth rounders. I believe they have 2 fifth rounders. That should allow them some ammunition to jump into the third round somewhere to get a corner or get pass rushing help, something. They probably want another bite at the top 100 prospects or picks.
Yeah.
At this point, they don't need so many late round picks. So I would be shocked if they stay put there. I would assume they're going to jump back into those middle rounds to try to get more help. As you mentioned, they need cornerback help. They need edge rusher help. They need interior defensive line help. They could use depth at a little bit of depth at wide receiver, interior offensive line. There are so many other holes, especially defensively, as we've talked about, that I would see the rest of the draft unfolding by them continuing to move around the board and probably move up, just because of right now, like we talked about, they got 2 first round picks and then nothing until round 4.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating, Andrew. I don't know. None of us know what to expect, right? Like, if they had already made the trade with New England or Arizona, say, this would be kind of boring. This is going to come down to draft night, and we're going to have to see how the board unfolds, I feel like, right? Like, I don't think we're going to know until Thursday night.
Yeah, nor should we, because if you're New England, you need to see how those first two picks unfold.
Yeah.
What if you've got Jaden Daniels rated incredibly highly and you just weren't expecting him to be there, and then all of a sudden he is, you know?
Yeah.
So that's why I just think all this talk about handshake deals and contingency deals in place and all this stuff, this happens this way, they'll do this. I don't think any of that's planned out. I think these teams talk about parameters, they talk about what they might want, what they ideally want. And then when those picks start falling, then things start happening real fast. And yeah, that's when this is going to truly start.
Yeah, well, we'll all watch it happen together, and it's going to be I'm ready for it to be a new chapter in this game. I'm sure you are too, as one of the Vikings writers. But appreciate your time as always. We'll follow Andrew and Ben Gessling's coverage, Mark Craig their coverage on Star Tribune, StarTribune.com from draft night and beyond. And Andrew, I'm sure we'll talk soon.
Sounds good, Mike. Thanks.
Great stuff from Andrew as usual. I'm going to be writing about some of the things we talked about. Really liked his point about Drake May. If the Patriots think Drake May is that good that he would command such a high trade package, why wouldn't they just draft him himself? I think that's a good point to make, and I don't think that's the guy they ultimately wind up with. I'm not feeling that at this point. I think it might be JJ McCarthy at this point, or they're going to have to wait a little longer and take somebody else. But we'll see. We will find out for sure Thursday night. One more day to talk about it. Chips Coggins and I will talk about the draft, the Vikings' needs, and the Timberwolves on Thursday's podcast. You will definitely want to listen to that.
Couple big things in the cooler. Let's put them both here. Twins, a comeback win over the White Sox. It was looking like a sad night for a while. Pablo Lopez, a short start, just four innings. Velocity was a little down. Command was a little bit down. Left with the Twins down 3-1. It was 5-2 late in this game before the Twins started to rally. Trevor Larnach, a long home run to get him within 5-4. Byron Buxton ties the game with a homer in the ninth, and Alex Kirilloff walks it off with a single later that inning. 6-5 is the final. Big win. I mean, I know the White Sox are terrible. They're 3-20, but imagine if the Twins had lost this game. You're like just starting to feel a tiny bit of hope, a tiny bit of momentum after they had beaten Chicago in the series opener, starting to feel better about themselves. Then they go into this game, and it's like, oh, man, you lost with your best pitcher going. You couldn't beat a team that could challenge, honestly, for the worst record in Major League history. This is a terrible White Sox team right now. You lose that game, you're going to be feeling really bad about yourselves. Instead, they rally, they win this game. Again, nothing terribly impressive about it, just it's more that you won instead of lost in this case. Good to get Byron Buxton on the board with the home run. A good rally. Again, don't lose that Pablo Lopez start, things like that. I'll have to watch and see if he can rebound in his next start. But, you know, trying to keep any sort of positive energy going after that 7-13 start. They're 9-13 now. Two more against Chicago now. Maybe a chance to just start feeling a little bit better about yourself. Wipe away the taste of those first 20 games. I also promised some good news in the transfer portal. There's a little bit of both for Gopher men's football, Gopher men's basketball, and Gophers football. Gophers men's basketball getting a visit from a guard from Oregon, Brennan Rigsby. So that's an interesting possibility. Even after losing Elijah Hawkins to the portal the other day, which was a big loss for them, that could be an option for them to fill out their backcourt. Averaged 6.1 points, 2.7 rebounds, shot 35% from three with Oregon last year, started 13 games, so he could be a possibility for the Gophers next year. Again, he's not going to replace Elijah Hawkins, who was second in the nation in assists last year, but could at least help them somewhat in filling out that roster and starting to feel a little bit better about the transfer portal, because it's been taking away a lot from them. And the Gopher football team got Tyler Williams, wide receiver transfer from Georgia. PJ Flexman getting a lot of guys in the portal this offseason. This recruit from Georgia, Tyler Williams, he was a four-star recruit coming out of high school, top 100 guy, played his high school at Lakeland High School in Florida, redshirted with Georgia, now coming to the Gophers. They've added a lot of big-name guys, LSU defensive end, Jackson Howard, who's from here, went to Cooper, Clemson defensive end, a lot of guys coming from major, title-winning, title-contending programs to the Gophers. That's a big deal. That's some good gets for PJ Fleck. And again, a point I like to make, nobody hates the transfer portal quite as much when you're getting players as opposed to losing players. I don't think anybody's like, oh man, I hate the portal now. They're getting all these good players. So just pay attention to that. Pay attention to how you feel about the transfer portal, how that changes depending on which way the door is swinging. That will do it for me today. The door is swinging out at the end of this show. Like I said, Chip Scoggins will be my guest on tomorrow's show. Wolves talk, Twins talk, maybe a little college talk as well, because I always like to engage Chip on that. Until then, have a great rest of your Wednesday. I am Michael Rand, back at it again tomorrow.